This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 215, and I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from USA Today. Seth Cox, my co-host, is with me as always. He's from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site. And the show really hasn't changed, but we do have some new digs in terms of distribution. You might notice that if you come at us a different way, we're still on Apple Podcasts, we're still on Stitcher Radio, you still find us featured on RevengeOfTheBirds.com and CardsWire.com, but through our new platform of Spreaker, which is associated with Blog Talk Radio, you can find us on a whole bunch of sites. You can find us, you can find the show on YouTube, you can find it on Spotify, you can find it now on Google Play, which you always could before. It's also on SoundCloud. It all distributes to all over those places. So there's more ways for you to get this show, which we call the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And Seth, thank goodness that we don't just have to talk about the game from Sunday, right? Because it was after, you know, about two possessions, it sort of fell apart.
Yeah, after about the first 6 minutes, it became one of those games where you find things to do on your honey-do list. And, you know, if you've got Christmas shopping to do, you get that taken care of. I mean, anything to not have to sit through that game on Sunday, which I sat through. All my guests by the end of the game were gone, and I was still sitting there watching. So by myself by the end. So that's what the Arizona Cardinals are doing at this point.
And it was bad enough that they even put Mike Glennon in the game, which was one of the positives, is that he didn't look awful. That was a positive. Josh Rosen did poorly, but Mike Glennon looked like a legitimate NFL quarterback in garbage time. Got himself a touchdown. So
that's Mike Glennon time, right?
Hey, absolutely. So let's talk about we're going to talk about this show is we have news about the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl was announced. The Pro Bowl selections were announced Tuesday night when we were recording. So we're going to react to that. So first and foremost, we're going to kind of put on the back burner the actual game. We're going to talk about the Pro Bowl. We're going to talk about if there were any snubs. We are going to react to one part, and this is an issue that's come up because of the end of that game against the Falcons that they lost 40-14. Josh Rosen was pulled for the last 7 minutes and 4 seconds. And there is discussion as to, at least among fans and media, whether it's time for the Cardinals to go ahead and just let him sit the rest of the season. We will look at the game. Is there any good that we get it? I mean, what went wrong? How did they go from good to bad so quickly? And then we're going to look ahead. Are there winnable games in the final 2 weeks? What do we really want to see and have to see? And is there any hope for Steve Wilks or even Steve Keim? That's what we're going to talk about this show. So let's kick this off about the Pro Bowl. Patrick Peterson is the sole member of the Cardinals to be selected to the Pro Bowl with three players who are Pro Bowlers a year ago, Bolt Budabaker, Chandler Jones, and Larry Fitzgerald, all being selected as Pro Bowl alternates. On the whole, Seth, would you have selected – obviously, Patrick Peterson deserves it. I mean, I don't think you can really say anything other than that, other than just let's sit in awe of this and understand we are watching greatness. This is like when the Cardinals had Aeneas Williams, only Patrick Peterson has been – an impact player from day one.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where, you know, people, I don't know why, I don't know, like it seems like people either, maybe it was the trade request, I'm not sure, like people aren't exactly enthused by the fact that Peterson was the only guy. I don't know. That was some of what the comments were from our site after we posted it. you know, that guys more deserving or harder workers earned it. And to me, it's like, that's history. I mean, literally, there's three guys in the history of football that have done what Patrick Peterson has done. Well, two, including Peterson. And it's two of the greatest, maybe the two greatest running backs ever in Jim Brown and Barry Sanders. Like, that's literally the entire list of guys that have gone to the Pro Bowl eight times in their first eight seasons. That's it. Like, I don't know.
Let's kind of run down. I've got the rundown of the accomplishments.
It's staggering how
it is incredible in terms of NFL and in terms of the elite he is within the NFL and with the team. So Jim Brown and Barry Sanders, the only players in NFL history other than now Patrick Peterson to be named to the Pro Bowl eight times before age 29. He's the only player in franchise history. I know the franchise has not been the greatest historically, but think of it's one of the oldest franchises, if not the oldest franchise. When it's an original charter member of the NFL, the only player in franchise history to be selected the Pro Bowl in each of his first 8 years. He's now surpassed Larry Fitzgerald's consecutive streak to the Pro Bowl, eight straight. Fitz did it seven straight. Let's look at the names of the active ones. So only Julius Peppers and Tom Brady have more Pro Bowl selections than Peterson in the NFL right now. And Tom Brady and Julius Peppers are ancient.
And two of the greatest players at their positions
right.
all time.
Right. And he now has, in terms of defensive players, he's now matched Larry Wilson. Peterson's among three, so only three players in team history have had eight selections or more. Peterson's got eight, Larry Wilson, Hall of Famers, eight, Larry Fitzgerald, 11, gonna be a Hall of Famer. Basically, what we're seeing, Peterson is on his way, well on his way to a Hall of Fame career. And I don't think, I think we as fans kind
take
of
it for granted.
Take it for granted because. Yes. Oh, just like, and that's even still, it's like trade packs. Like, are you kidding me? Now, you might be able to, if Patrick Peterson wants to be traded, insists on being traded in the offseason. But goodness, have we not seen the issues that we've had at cornerback two? Imagine having that at cornerback two and cornerback one. Having a Patrick Peterson, you have to replace him. And who do you replace him with? Because there's like maybe two or three other players that you would say, okay, you'd want him in his place. You could put Jalen Ramsey in that category. Who else? Who would you put in that category in terms of age and ability?
I mean, when you just look at the list of guys, I think Byron Jones makes the list now. He's been really phenomenal in Dallas and his growth under Chris Richard, their new defensive coordinator. And he's a guy that the Cardinals had a chance to draft and didn't, one of those. I think he's one. Ramsey's obviously one, like you said. He is special.
Marshawn Lattimore.
Maybe Denzel Ward, but I mean, that's 1 year.
Right, right.
Darius Slay is definitely a guy in Detroit. I mean, we saw it firsthand here. Like he's a phenomenal cornerback as well. But it's really, maybe a group of five total.
Right.
And that's the thing is like Slay and Ramsey are the only ones that have done it as consistently or, you know, longevity wise. And we're talking about, you know, only 3 years for Ramsey and 4 years for Slay. So, I mean, Peterson's done it longer than both combined.
It's insane. Now we look at let's talk snubs. I can honestly say I don't think we even need to have a discussion about no one on the Cardinals offense, Larry Fitzgerald included, deserved a Pro Bowl selection.
No,
Fitz gets the honorary alternate. He's not had a great year statistically, but you can't do anything with that Cardinals offensive side of the ball. David Johnson, nobody deserves to be anywhere near that. pretty much the entire group of the Cardinals offense deserves to be closer to a toilet bowl than a Pro Bowl. Sorry, that was
right,
stupid.
Exactly. And when you look at the, you know, you talked about Fitz, he's not a snub, but he's probably going to go. I'm going to guess one of Julio Jones or Michael Thomas end up not playing in the game, if not both, for different reasons. Jones likely just because his body, I mean, he's been banged up towards the end of the season in what has been kind of a bad season for the Falcons. And then Thomas, because he could be playing in the Super Bowl or coming off a heartbreaking loss in the NFC Championship game. And those guys, when they make it to the NFC Championship, they typically, if they've been there before, they'll bow out.
Yeah. Now, I can name two snubs on the Cardinals. One is circumstance, and another isn't even the most ridiculous snub. Let's talk about Chandler Jones. Chandler Jones, 12 sacks on the season. It's eighth in the NFL. He is not a Pro Bowler. He's a Pro Bowl alternate. But you know why he's not a Pro Bowler this year? Scheme change. He's a defensive end.
Yeah, the outside scheme, and he's on a bad team, and that may sound stupid, but you know, your three starting or your three defensive ends in the Pro Bowl are all playoff teams. And so when they have the numbers as good or better than Jones, and then they play on winning teams, that's always going to win out.
Yep. Now, if he were still an outside linebacker like in previous years, I mean, you've got Khalil Mack, you've got Ryan Kerrigan, and you've got Anthony Barr. Chandler Jones makes it over Barr, maybe, and Ryan Kerrigan.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that. He hasn't been otherworldly like he was a year ago.
And again, he'll probably end up there. I don't know all the alternates. Like, I haven't gone through it. But again, Cameron Jordan, if he's in the Super Bowl,
that's possible.
He's
Danielle Hunter.
You know, Danielle Hunter and DeMarcus Lawrence are two young guys. They'll probably both go. But Cameron Jordan's a guy that could definitely bow out. And so all of a sudden, you know, you look at it and then, you know, he's in again. So, you know, same type of thing.
Now, the other guy is Andy Lee. I mean, Andy Lee, one of the best punters in all of football. He's arguably the Cardinals MVP this year. But, I mean, can you blame him for not being on the Pro Bowl? Because the guy who's ahead of him, Michael Dixon, has better stats.
Yeah, and to be fair, nobody watches the Cardinals because Andy Lee's the most visible and active player every week on offense. So, like, when you look at it from that perspective, he gets a lot of volume stats, if you will, because he sure does get a lot of practice out there.
Well, that's true. And then the one stat that I think is kind of more impressive is that he's right up there in the top 10 of the league for punts inside the 20. And considering how bad the Cardinals offense is now, that's the upside too for a punter who's on a bad team offensively, is that he can just kick the crap out of the ball as far as he wants, and it'll still good gross numbers, good net numbers, because you can just kick the heck out of it. It's when you get guys like a guy like Dixon or guys that punt for these quality teams who still can do that and punt on short fields.
Right. And Lee is usually working with a big field that he can just,
and he has to flip field position, which he does really well.
He does. Yeah. So, I mean, it's sad that we're having this conversation, but that's the crux of where this team is this year.
And I think that's about it. So coming up next on the Rise Up C-Rep podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about Josh Rosen, because he was pulled from that game. Was it the right move? Should it continue to be the right move? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Rep. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk of the web. And probably the biggest talking point coming out of that game against the Falcons was the fact that Josh Rosen was pulled from that game. Down 40-7, sacked six times, picked off twice, hit nine times, pressured another number of times. He was visibly upset. They were down 40-7. The defense had given up. They'd given up 40 straight points. They pull him from the game. I wouldn't even call it a benching. It was just, okay, it was time to bring in the relief pitcher. And then people's there. And so this is an actual debate. There's a lot of people who think that the Cardinals should keep him on the bench the rest of the way. Now, first of all, Seth, do you agree with the move to pull him? And do you think that they should start him in the last 2 weeks of the season?
You know, this is a similar conversation to what the Rams were going through 2 years ago. And then the Cardinals went into LA and just kind of pummeled them. Right. So it's tough because it's your rookie quarterback and you're still getting him reps, but the Rams made a similar choice in the final game after, I believe, the sixth sack Jared Goff, or the sixth time Jared Goff had been sacked. I think it was Marcus Golden that final time. So when you look at it from all of that, like, you got to protect your asset at the same time. So I understood pulling him. He had been sacked six times. They gave up seven sacks in the game. I mean, Mike Glennon got one series, right? One series, and he got sacked. So, you know, that was about average for the course. Like, every series, they're going to give up a sack. So when you look at it from that perspective, I think in the game, as the flow of the game was going on, it made sense. The question on whether he should remain bench is a lot harder to ascertain, because what you're trying to figure out is, are you doing more harm than good at this point to Josh Rosen? And I still cannot answer it. I don't know. Like, I go back and forth because it's clear that he's regressed in terms of just statistical play. He doesn't look as comfortable as he did in the first game. He's playing behind five guys on the offensive line, and I'd be shocked if three of them were on rosters next year. Like, there's just, I mean, and then you look at who he's throwing to outside of Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. There's not, I mean, again, how many of those guys are actually going to be on rosters in 2019? So when you look at it from that perspective, is he gaining anything from playing? And I go back and forth because I've watched him get his butt kicked. I've watched him struggle. And so do you want to continue to see that? Like, is he a guy that's going to end up getting broken? And that's the one concern you have, is that you don't want to break your new toy on Christmas morning, right? Like, you just got this and you just took it out of the box, and now your little brother's kind of banging it around the house and goofing off with it, and you're like, hold on, don't do that. I don't want to play with it yet because I don't want you to play with it, basically. And that's where the Cardinals are right now. Like, these aren't guys that are going to be playing with Josh Rosen in a year anyways, or 8 months or 9 months, whatever it is. And so do you really want them getting Josh Rosen hurt or worse, you know, getting him to the point where his psyche's broken and he's not able, you know, he gets David card? Like, that's the concern.
But there's a part of me now, and I'll go on the record and say everything that Steve Wilks said to me makes sense. We're down 40-7. I mean, you take the baseball, if you go to the baseball analogy, Hall of Fame pitchers get pulled from starts because they just didn't have it and it didn't make sense for them to continue to get shelled. I'm with Steve Wilks. There was nothing advantageous to have him finish that game. This is a little bit different than, say, Carson Palmer in the NFC Championship game. He's a grizzled veteran and he wanted to take his lumps and said, I'm going to finish this out. Like, I'm going to be on the field with my guys. But Rosen was shaken. He was frustrated. And let's be honest, that Atlanta defense was just coming time after time after time again. That's exactly the game that you pull him from. I have no problem with that. There was nothing to be gained at that point after that sixth sack. Now, moving forward, one of the comments that Wilkes said on the radio, he didn't say it in the press conference, but he said it on the radio interview right after the press conference on Monday, is says, you know, it creates, if you were to sit him the rest of the way, it potentially creates the feeling of a mindset of packing up and quitting. So, oh, well, you pulled Josh. Unless you feel, and I think all along they've always believed that Josh gives them a better chance of winning than Mike Glennon, I'm guessing, because that's what they continue to say. So they think that highly of Rosen. They really like Glennon. They love what he offers. They love his stability. They love his mentorship. But ever since training camp, since the offseason, Rosen's been ahead of him. And if you are taking a healthy guy, a healthy quarterback, and you sit him on the bench for a guy that they believe, that everyone believes is the lesser player, especially when it's not a young guy, it does create the sense that, well, why should I try? We're giving up. And so I completely buy into that. I definitely say, okay, you start against the Rams, and if it gets out of hand, you pull him again. Because again, once there is nothing to be learned or nothing to be gained, then you pull him. Now, that doesn't mean the second they're done down by two touchdowns, because he can learn to bounce back from that. But when you've been hit 20 times and your receivers aren't getting open and you've turned the ball over and you're down by 30 points, okay, time to let Glennon get in the game. So I am for starting him, but also treating games in the same manner that, okay, don't keep him out there to get beat to a pulp unless there's something to be gained from it, because he still does need the reps, and I'd rather him make his mistakes now than next year. I don't want the problems to continue.
And that's kind of where I am. Like, I don't want to bench him because I think it sends the wrong signal. And as much as we all know that, like, Rosen's kind of more important than some of the other players on the team, like, it sends the wrong signal that he's clearly more important than other players on the team. Right. So like, you don't want to do that right now. You know, but I think depending on how much time is left in games, like, I don't know. When you look at it from the perspective of if they're down three touchdowns after three quarters, I think at that point you just pull them, right? Like, unless it's a game where you're actually scoring. So, like, unless it's a game where, okay, you've put up 21, but they're up, you know, 42 or, you know, 45 to 21. So, like, that's a little different. But, like...
If down it's, 28-3 or
yeah, if you're down 20-3, right? If you're down three scores in the fourth quarter and you've nary a touchdown, like, all right, like, put Glennon in, but I don't know. At the same time, you don't want to break him. Like I said,
that's so true. My take on the breaking him has always been, we cite the David Carr situation. If he could be broken, maybe he wasn't as good as what people thought he could have been.
Oh, I am 100%. I'm a believer in that, but I also think that there's a psyche that goes into things.
Yeah,
and quarterbacks need to believe in themselves at a kind of obnoxious pace, and. So if you don't want to break that portion of him is more what I mean. Like, you don't want to break the confidence in himself that Rosen innately has. And I think that's where the concern lies more than anything else.
And yeah, and I think he has the mental makeup to be fine. And that's the part that I like about Rosen. He seems to have the right mental makeup, in my opinion. So moving forward, obviously, a Josh Rosen start this week makes sense. Hopefully he doesn't get killed. That's really the only real concern. Does he suffer a real injury? Now, the one thing about the quarterback position is they're protected so much is that normally, like those really bad injuries, you don't – it's the crippling injuries that you have to deal with. Even an ACL this time of year would be bad. But a collarbone issue, a dislocated shoulder, a sprained ankle, those aren't the type of injuries I worry about so much for a quarterback. Especially since it won't really affect them. It would affect some of them might affect any when he gets up hobbling with the ankle, unless it's a break. You really don't worry so much about that because that won't cause them to lose time in the off season.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing that you look at and you worry about is that will he, you don't want him to miss any of a key offseason, second offseason, so to speak. Of course, we heard so much good about the first offseason. Look where we're at now. But, right, you don't want to miss anything from that. So that's the biggest thing.
And I think that's a good place to stop with that. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're gonna change gears. We'll actually go to the game. We're not gonna go to the game. We're gonna talk about the game. And was there anything good? And what happened? Is there recurring problems seem to be? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Let's talk about this game, a 40-14 disaster. But it started out. So let's talk. Is there anything good that we can take from that game?
I think we continue to see that the script is strong and short. So as soon as the script runs out, there seems to be very little confidence in Byron Leftwich and Josh Rosen. And I don't know if it's because you've got a rookie OC calling plays for a rookie quarterback or what it is, but when the script is on and they're able to stick to the script for, you know, those 10 to 15 plays, it looks really competent. It looks like a team that can compete. And I think that's a good thing because that means that what they work on during the week, actually they're able to translate to the game. It's the in-between that they're struggling with.
For me, there were a couple of positives that I saw. Well, one is the continued, it looks like, at least right now, it looks like that Hassan Reddick has turned a corner with his play. That's a positive for me. To see a guy like Trent Sherfield start to get to develop a little, that's positive. Basically, the rookies playing at this point is, even if they're not playing well, they're taking their lumps. That's a positive. But there weren't many good things. That's probably about it because they didn't do great in the passing game. They didn't protect well. They didn't run the ball well. But the like you said, the fact that they come out and they're competitive from the beginning until there's adversity leaves you to believe. And that's the thing against the Packers is that they never really faced that adversity. They kept it close. They are designed, the way their offense is designed is them for to be methodical and careful and to keep the game close. Where they run into problems is the turnovers. And the turnovers and the big plays on defense. And you still see like the passing game, because Matt Ryan, he's put up some pretty amazing numbers. The Cardinals continue to take away the passing game over the top. So there's one part of the defense that's good.
Yeah, and when you look at the overall aspect of the team, you've seen like glimpses of good things. You've seen, you know, a little bit of a Trent Sherfield emergence. You've seen that, you know, when force fed the ball, Larry Fitzgerald's still a guy that can put up good numbers in the league. David Johnson, again, he looks like he's going to get over 1,000 yards rushing on the season, which I know it doesn't mean much now in today's NFL, but to Cardinals fans, I mean, that's a huge number, right? Like, that was one that we were waiting to see for years and years and years. So if you're an old school Cardinals fan, you know, you go back to guys like Adrian Morrell and, you know, and those guys. So he's putting up numbers again that we expected. And that's the hard part, I think, is that there are aspects to every game where you're like, why is this team so bad? As opposed to saying like, oh, this is a team that, you know, has building blocks to move forward.
For me, the answer to that is the fact that they just can't put a whole game together. It's different if they put it together for every other game or 1-3, but they're complete games, is that there is disaster. I mean, there's a couple of things, like their defense, especially against the run, will be good for legitimately good for three quarters. But then the big plays, I mean, Tevin Coleman, I mean, the Falcons were the worst rushing team in the NFL, 82 yards a game, and they put up 215. They had a 65-yarder. They had a 44-yarder. They had a 43-yarder. So they gave up three rushes for more than 40 yards. One of them got negated down to 18 because of a penalty down the field, but it still happened. That's, you can't have three. You can't, as a defense, really give up any plays, any running plays of over 40 yards and expect to be decent, except, I mean, on those trick plays or gadget plays, maybe from a scat back or a receiver, or maybe, but not even a scramble from the quarterback, because you should be converging. And that's the part that you're just like, this, they're holding them and then getting gasped by two or three plays.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, you see them coming. I think that's the worst part. Like, when you are watching the game and they get two stops or three stops, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, it's third and four, and then you're like, oh my gosh. Yeah, here comes one of the big ones. Like, and it's like from the first, it's like from the first two steps of the snap. Like, the running back's not even past the line, and you're like, oh my gosh, look at that hole. Like, a guy gets blocked, a linebacker goes the wrong way, and now everything's wide open, and these guys are running in free space. And Tevin Coleman has been really bad this year. Like, the whole idea of Coleman coming into the season was like, hey, we still have, you know, Devontae Freeman's our guy. We paid him, blah, blah, blah. And then he got injured, and it was like, oh, it's no big deal. We have Tevin Coleman. And then you look at what Coleman's done this year, and he hadn't been good. And that's the frustrating thing that you've kind of hinted at, is like, And it's just kind of a microcosm of what this team has been this year, is outside of the Carolina game and then like the Washington game, there hasn't been much to like write home about from Tevin Coleman. So you look at it, he started, I think, 12 or 13 games this year because of Devontae Freeman's injury, and he was averaging under, I want to say he was averaging under 4.2 yards per carry coming into the game. And then he averaged over 13 yards a carry against the Cardinals. And so it's just like, it goes back to what we've talked about before. It's like, it's not the, you know, death by a thousand cuts. It's, you block the first five cuts, and then they like slice your jugular, and then you bleed out.
That is, that's the, they're, yeah, they're, the running game is, they stop it, or they stop it for three quarters, and then one drive they can't tackle.
Right, one drive they can't tackle, they can't do anything,
and then it's Zach Zenner, like against Detroit.
Right. Yeah, so sorry. Coleman was averaging 4 yards per carry before the Cardinals game. And then, yeah, now he's averaging 4.7 yards per carry. So, like, it's just a microcosm of who they've been this season, like, of what they've done this season and the struggles they've had this season is that they put themselves in a position to lose games instead of putting themselves in a position to win games.
And with that, you end up with a
lopsided, yeah.
Bad stuff. And the same thing happens offensively. They've put together since Byron Leftwich took over, they do have one or two drives where you're like, okay. But the part that I just have the hardest time with is just how mentally weak this team is. They don't respond to any adversity at all. Like, if anything bad happens offensively, then the defense just falls apart. And the same thing kind of offensively as well. And that's the part that's the most troubling is that it's almost like they're waiting for something to go wrong. And then they're like, well, I knew it was coming. And then things just continue to go the wrong way. It's different than they did okay at this against the Chiefs because that game had a chance to get away from them and it didn't. That's it. So it didn't get away from them.
And I don't know how many people like listen to local Arizona radio, but that was one of the things that like I think it's glossed over quite a bit. Is that you know when people are like, oh, they kept it close against Kansas City. Well, that's the thing, and I think it's kind of overstated. It like they kept it close. Well, that was what was expected of them the rest of the season, right? Like they weren't expected to beat teams. Nobody expected them to beat Kansas City. Nobody expected them to beat the Chargers. Nobody expected them to beat the Falcons, but they expected you to be competent against them. And I think that's what the bigger issue is that you were competent against the Kansas City Chiefs, a team that looks like it has a really good shot of going to the Super Bowl. And then you next week lose at home to the Oakland Raiders, who look utterly incompetent. You then look incompetent against the LA Chargers.
But for a quarter, they look great.
Right. And then you come back and you look completely competent against the Green Bay Packers. And I know they're not the Packers this year, but like they're still, I mean, it was still an away game in the cold. And you still not only look competent, you managed to win. And so,
and then you come back. Packers team walloped the Falcons team that boat raced you.
Right. And then, but that's the thing. And then you come back the next week and the competence isn't even on the table against the Lions. You look utterly disinterested as a team. Right. And so I think that's what the issue is as much as anything else is that there's no consistency week to week. There's no consistency from quarter to quarter.
Yeah, that is the issue. And with that, well, let's wrap that up and talk about the next part. And there's two games left on the schedule. What do we have to see? Is there any sort of chance that they could sneak one of the final two games? That's what we're going to talk about next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals end the season. They've got their home finale this weekend against the LA Rams, and then they travel to Seattle. Both teams are still very much playing meaningful football, but the Rams are struggling, while Seattle, they were playing well, and then lost to the 49ers. Thanks, 49ers, since now the Cardinals sit at the number one pick overall. If they lose their last two games, hello, number one pick, and we'll have lots to talk about in the offseason for that, but one, are either of these games even remotely winnable? One, and two, what must you see in the final two games to at least satisfy at a minimum level, your Cardinals' desire for great?
I mean, the final 2 weeks, you just want to see, like I said, confidence. You want to see a team that looks like it's going in the right direction, because the last couple of weeks, they haven't looked like that. So, I mean, for me, that's honestly the biggest thing you want to see, is just a team that looks like it hasn't any idea which way it's headed. I think the other thing that you'd like to see is progress from Josh Rosen. I mean, obviously, I feel like it's too much to ask at this point to expect a whole lot from the offensive line, because we talked about earlier. I mean, there might be two guys on the offensive line that are even on NFL rosters next year. And so, like, I don't know if it's fair to expect them to be anything more than middling to poor, because, I mean, they're just made up of guys that weren't expected to be playing right now. So, you know, but growth from Rosen, I think, trumps all that, so to speak. Defensively, I don't know. Like, I know that Larry Fitzgerald's saying that they haven't quit on him, but for me, I want to feel like they're still engaged. And I think this is like an old football kind of rah-rah thing, and maybe it's not true and all, but like a lot of people say, you know, stopping the runs about effort and heart and things of that nature and will. And it just feels like at times that's missing from this Cardinals team. And you talked about it, that Zach Zinner drive, or kind of those two drives by Zach Zinner to end the game, that just felt like giving up on defense. You know, the lack of effort against the run against the Falcons, that just felt like giving up. And you don't want to feel that way after games when you're watching them, when you're investing 3 to 4 hours of your life into them.
For me, the at least defensively, I want to feel like defensively that they, you know, the Lions game, for example, it was atrocious to watch. But by the end of that game, you think defensively they did enough to win, and the offense just didn't have it. Defensively, when you give up only 10 points, that should be a good enough effort for you to win. You can't have what happened last week where, you know, you give up the pick six and then things just get out of hand and you give up over 200 yards on the ground. It's really hard. You want to see if you want to go back, let's go back to 2014 when things unraveled at the end of the season when Drew Stanton and Ryan Lindley were starting. You could see the defense eroding, but they were still trying. And what I want to see more of, at least, is a defensive effort like unto the game against the Lions, where for three quarters they were the better defense, and then the fourth quarter just eroded. It makes it a little bit demoralizing, but at least you see hope. And then if you got a close game, then you're like, then all you need is some fluke to happen on offense. You need just something right to happen.
Just the confidence. I mean, I know it sounds like so simple, but like that's what's been lacking, is that like any semblance of consistency and confidence from the team. And like you said, like defensively, that breaks your will. And so it makes it hard for a defense to feel like they're accomplishing anything when it doesn't matter what they do, right? Because it doesn't matter if they get a stop or two stops, because the offense isn't going to do anything, and then they're just going to have to be back out on the field again. And so that's the hard part of this entire situation, is keeping these guys engaged for 60 minutes. And you might say, well, they're paid, they're professionals, blah, blah. But let's be honest, like most of the adults that are either on this show or listen to the show have jobs. Like,
do we always give 100% effort at our jobs? Like, that's just, it's just reality. And so they're human as well. So when things go bad, when they have adversity, you'd like to say, well, you know, it's just 60 minutes, you know, once a week they can do it. But it's not. It's soul crushing. It's defeating, knowing that no matter what you do, the outcome it is unlikely to be in your favor. And like you said, the game against the Lions was kind of that perfect example, is that the defense did more than enough. The offense was just so incompetent, it couldn't do anything. And you look at the Falcons game, the defense gets a three and out, right? And then the offense goes down and scores immediately. All right, good start. Then what happens the next drive? The defense forces another punt. And this is a Falcons offense that is very talented. And then what is the next thing that transpires? And that's the backbreaking. That's the soul crushing that we're talking about. That's hard to overcome. And Josh Rosen throws a pick six, and it's basically over at that point. Like, the defense, like, even if you don't want to, you get in your mind, here it goes again.
Yeah, yeah. And what do I want to see the rest of the way with David Johnson within striking distance of 1,000 yards? He needs 157 over the final 2 weeks. That's important, especially for how things went early on. And it would be a good indication that the running game is doing something. So I want that to happen. Obviously, Larry Fitzgerald, he's not going to get to 1,000 yards. He's got 645. So they would take two otherworldly games to do that. Like something out of his rookie, something out of his second year to have that happen. But I do. I want to see David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald heavily involved in the offense in a variety of ways. Now, offensively, I still want to see things that Steve Wilks keeps talking about. He keeps talking about Chase Edmonds and David Johnson on the field at the same time. He keeps talking about six and seven man protections for Josh Rose. He keeps talking about like little boots and moving the pocket. Yet we don't see them, which is I wonder, because he's been saying things like that since Mike McCoy. He's been saying it ever since Byron Leftwich took over. I'm wondering, where is the disconnect that they can't manage to include those things in the game plan? Do things go that awry that you can't do anything at all creative?
Well, and it also begs the question if it's even in the playbook. Like, and I'm not trying to be a jerk, but like,
Wilkes is asking for things that don't even exist. Hey, Byron, make something. But
right, like, hey, can we do this? And he's not saying like, can you work this in? It's like, no, literally, can we do it? Like, is it something that's in our playbook that we can try? Because this whole getting Josh killed thing with 5 and 7 step drops is not the best idea. And so, you know, I don't know. It's frustrating because, like you said, it's something that's plagued now two coordinators, where the head coach is saying, hey, like, why aren't we doing this more? And I think that's, again, the disconnect between a new head coach and two coordinators, you know, one of which is new and himself, and he's trying to figure out what he is as a coach and everything. And it's, you know, that's what makes it really difficult. And so you can request as much as you want, whatever you want, but it doesn't mean that it's going to happen, because maybe it's just not there right now.
And to wrap this up, coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast for the last session, the last segment of the show, we're going to talk about if there's any hope for Steve Wilks and Steve Keim. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talking on the web. Now, is there any hope at all for Steve Wilks? Is it a foregone conclusion that he's gone? And what sort of percentage do you give it? Because I'll be honest, while it at for in terms of purposes and the word that we use out for the optics of the situation almost requires that you come out and say, this isn't acceptable. We fire Steve Wilks. We relieved him of our duties. But inside, I still get the feeling this is about a 50-50 proposition, because I think they understand inside the organization that what happened, I don't know, is that being competitive was a best case scenario, and we clearly did not have the best case scenario. Everything that went wrong could go wrong. And I don't know of how you can, if they believed in Steve Wilks as a leader of men, how you can put that on him. That said, can you imagine? Because our next show, when we talk, we're not going to talk after the Rams game because it's Christmas. So the next time we record this show, it will be after a decision has been made. How many fans do you think are going to start burning things and rioting if they keep Steve Wilks?
And that's a hard thing right now, because the question becomes, is the firing at this point simply symbolic, right? Like, is a firing of Wilks just a nod to fans of, like, you're right, we can't continue in this direction, or this season itself was unacceptable? But it's something you and I have talked about. If you do that, then are you giving Steve Keim a complete, you know, mulligan for this entire year? Because most of the decisions were his. And so if you fire Steve Wilks, but basically take the blame off of Steve Keim, it's a weird message to send.
I agree. And as much as people would say that Steve Keim has earned this other chance, let's look at the last 3 years. And let's look at the last time they fired their coach and GM. That was after the 2012 season. It was 3 years without the postseason. It was 18 wins. 5 wins, 8 wins, 5 wins. The Cardinals now, assuming they don't win again the rest of the season, because it looks highly unlikely that will happen, they've now had missed the playoffs for 3 straight years and 18 wins. And all the offseason moves that Steve Keim did didn't work this year. He has a good draft class. It appears there's been draft mistakes. You look at Daewon Buchanan not working out longer than he did. Robert Kamdichi is an issue. DJ Humphreys, DJ Humphrey's durability is in question. Jonathan Cooper was an abject failure. There's misses in the middle rounds that they haven't gotten much contributions from the second round overall. Their sixth round pick, you know, granted it's a sixth round pick, but their sixth round picks, they're basically guys you cut.
Yeah,
they don't make the team, and so there's a lot to put on Keim. And yes, they've had some success, and you can look at 2016 and 2017 as quality teams that have extenuating circumstances that kept them from competing. But this is bottoming out. I've said on the show before, it's like if you fire Wilks, I think the smart and best move is to move on from Keim as well, because didn't he make the hire to begin with? Obviously, Bidwill was involved, but if Wilks is your hire and he has gone about his business the way he said he would go about his business, but just didn't have the results, that's probably just as much on you. And then how can we as fans trust you to make the next hire if the last guy that you hired was an abject failure?
Right, and that's what the hard sell is, and you and I talked about this a little bit off air. Like, if you take the top 10 names out there, and just the top 10, and say, like, these are the top 10 names, and the Cardinals get the first pick, and the only way that a coach can get a head coaching job is if they accept the Cardinals coaching job. Those guys don't have another choice. But then you present them with the idea that, well, Steve Wilks got fired after 1 year, but this is different. And, oh, by the way, Steve Keim, he's not on the hot seat. You don't have to listen to all of that. Like, that's something else that if you fire Wilks and you don't fire Keim, a coach is going to come in and say, what is my time frame here? Like, how soon do I have to win before I'm on the hot seat, or this guy gets me fired by being on the hot because he's on the hot seat? Like, that's what the question becomes, and I just don't know. I honestly don't know what the answer is and how you do that.
Which means if Steve Keim survives this, you have to think that he has more or less the blessing of Michael Bidwill for at least 2 more years, right? Because
I would say 3, but yeah, at least 2.
And that, beside that, there's also, of course, the financials to deal with. The Keim is signed through 2022. So is Wilks. And so if you fire Wilks in a year from now, you're going to bring in a GM and tell him that he's got to deal with this coach here. And maybe it works out. That doesn't always work out. But if you don't hire him, then you end up not believing in him, right? If things go awry, if things don't go well, it's real easy for that GM to say, "Oh, he's not my guy. I didn't want him. I didn't hire him." And so then you end up paying 3 coaches because you go 2 years in and they fired the next coach. Now you hire another one. You're still paying Wilks. You're still paying this guy. Now you're paying a new coach on top of that. And I know the NFL has just disgusting money. It's not even real money. They have more money than they even know what to do with. And so money shouldn't be an issue. But I mean, it's still, that's millions of dollars. That's millions of dollars that can go in your pocket instead of to the pockets of people that you fired.
Right. And that's the whole thing is it is a lot to ask of Michael Bidwill to fire a coach and then bring in another and allow a GM. Because here's the thing. How often do GMs get to hire 3 coaches in 7 years? And I know the Arians thing was kind of slightly unexpected and it wasn't within Keim's control. But we're talking, like, that's literally what's going to happen. You're going to have 3 head coaches in 7 years. It's really not common for a GM to survive that kind of turnover.
Right. And so the question, and that's what you're going to be, that's what we're going to find out in the next 2 weeks. So they're going to play the Rams, they're going to play the Seahawks, and then on January, what is it, December 31st, on New Year's Eve, Monday morning, we're going to find out. We're going to find out. We might find out the night before. We might find out Sunday night. And we'll have news, and this will make for an interesting offseason, because if they keep Wilks, there's a lot of selling that this team has to do to the fan base. They've got to do a lot of that. And, you know, I am impressed with Wilks. I mean, aside from the coaching side, I am impressed with his ability and insistence to stick to what he's been saying all year. I know that he got a little bit of grief among fans and in some people for how he was asked the question. He's been asked about the last 3 or 4 weeks if he thinks about his job security. He said, "No, I don't worry about that. I can't focus on that. And I just focus on the now. I just can focus on the now." And the radio host, they asked it kind of an interesting different way to trying to get some different things. So if you have to do again, would you do differently? And he said, you know, we'll get to that at the end of the season. Right now, I'm just focusing on right now. So the thing about Wilks is he's been super consistent. I know that's one of the biggest things with the player coach thing is you've got to be consistent in your message. Wilks has got that. So there's football issues. I don't think there's a coaching issue necessarily. He's preaching. He's practicing what he's preaching. And there's a disconnect somewhere of talents and of just fortune, game management, or just, I mean, roster construction to begin with. And so in 2 weeks, we're going to find that out, and we're going to have a whole lot of fun this offseason, I have a feeling. Because regardless of what happens with the coaching staff, this is going to be a fun offseason because we're going to have a high draft pick. We've got lots of cap space. And so there's a potential to really, really, really change this roster.
Right. And it is ripe for a hot offseason of podcasting. That's what this is. I mean, we could be talking, you know, coach firing, and then we'll get a coaching search, and then a coaching hire podcast, and then we're already at free agency. And so it'll be great for the brand.
Absolutely. So with that, stay with us. We've been doing this for a long time. Again, this is episode 215. So if you've been with us, you know. If you're just jumping on, hey, we've been doing this for a long time. We will talk about the Cardinals. It's going to be a fun offseason. They had Seth Cox, Revenge of the Birds. Read his stuff. I'm Jess Root from Cards Wire as well. You can find me my stuff there. There's lots of Cardinals content everywhere to be had. We'll wrap up this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Have a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever it is you celebrate. We will be back after the end of the season. We will talk about the end of the season and what there is moving forward. Is there a new coach? Is there a new GM? Is everything staying the same? We'll be back. Thanks for listening as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.